So in 2020, I actually shut down Chef Rex.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I was tired. I was done. There was an implosion in my business, to be honest. A new venture I had done, it didn't go well. My landlady was giving me stress. There was just a bit of unhappiness in the structure of my business at the time. I was having my first child. There was just a lot happening at the same time. So I prayed about it and I just felt God tell me, shut it down.
Are there any mistakes you made early on in your career that helped shape how you build today?
How many mistakes should we talk about? Do you have time?
Chef Rex is one of the most recognizable culinary voices out of Nigeria. A Le Cordon Bleu trained chef who took the fire French technique and brought it back home to create something entirely his own.
It seems easy to build a food business because people like to eat in this country, right? But the hard thing is there's no real structure and path for you to follow. So when you're registering a food business, it should be very clear that an agency should maybe walk through, pass through so that you understand what's happening.
From hosting amazing dinners that changed the way young Nigerians saw food, to navigating the chaos of running a business in Nigeria while still keeping his joy and soul intact. This is a story about vision and building a creative empire plate by plate, scent by scent.
There's a thing on social media. When you cook jollof rice in London, it's better than Nigeria. Nobody should fight me on this. I have to agree slightly. Don't get me wrong, jollof rice in Nigeria is delicious. But London jollof rice, fabulous. Guess why?
When did you realize that food was your form of storytelling?
Wow, I realized, first of all, thank you guys for having me. I feel honored. This couch is nice, so I'm taking it after. I knew food was my story. I've always been a storyteller.
Yeah.
I was always the kid that talked. I talked my way out of everything because I remember once when I was in primary school, they wrote on my report card that I was boisterous. When I found out what boisterous meant, I wasn't even offended. I was like, yeah, that's a good thing. There's a lot of energy, you know? I was always the guy to talk. I was a debater. I was a public speaker in like my, from GSS1 all through senior secondary school. I was like a student leader at university. So talking had always come with who I was. But it was about university. When I went to Covenant University, and that was a school that was very particular about your craft, your purpose in life. So I started to dig deep. So by the end of NYSC was when I discovered that I really wanted to do this food thing because I really like to eat and cook from when I was really young. So I started to understand that it could be storytelling because I engaged in a lot of prayer and I was like, God, how do you explain to people that you want to cook? Like, what was that? It's just rice and stew or just cooking. But I was watching a lot of Jamie Oliver. I was watching a lot of Inslee Harriott, Anthony Worrall Thompson, James Martin on the BBC. I saw that these people were entertaining me through food. So, I mean, Jamie Oliver is my idol, even if he botched that jollof rice recipe. Jamie, I still love you. Because I found out he was sucking me into a world that I believed in, whether or not I was interested or not. He made it believable. So I would say I was about 16 years old when I knew exactly that this was the life I wanted to live. I saw it and I knew that this was it. How I engaged more with storytelling was when I came back from Paris as well. I went to Cordon Bleu. Getting back from Paris, I wanted to go back to Paris, but I found myself stuck in Nigeria. I found out that I had to learn how to sell, first of all, this talent, this gift, this passion that I had. But more importantly, there was this rise. Shout out to Ozor Soko, whose new book is out, Chop Chop. Ozor was one of the first people that started to tell that Nigerian food story. Like, what we have was good. So I realized that, okay, I have a responsibility as well. So let's say early 2012, was when I bought into that responsibility. So I started sharing more recipes, started sharing more menus as well that were very Nigerian ingredients focused, Nigerian heritage focused. I was very fortunate to work with brands who did cookbooks. So I did a 50 recipe book with a brand. Not sure I can say their name here. I did it with a brand. They had shot the book actually, but they didn't like it. So I had to do it. So it was a chance to be very immersed again in culture and so many other things that I've been able to do. So let's just say at different phases, but to summarize, when I was 16, I knew I wanted to do this with my life. And, you know, in the early, 2011, 2012, I knew that I had a responsibility as a Nigerian culinary innovator, artist to tell a Nigerian food story through my food.
I love that. And, you know, you talked about something that I wanted to bring up was where you studied, right? At Cordon Bleu. And how did you decide to come back and say, I'm ready to go on a very like non-traditional path, right? Because you studied something different in college. So how did you reconcile those two?
So again, you remember I said I was a boisterous kid growing up, right? I was a child that, you know, they dressed the two children, my sister and I, to school. My sister comes back looking the same way she came home. Me, I look like I robbed a bank and they beat me because I didn't do a good job, you know? So that energy, I think, just followed me, because in uni, while everybody wanted to, like when people were getting IT jobs in the summer, I was looking for a hotel to work in because I just was like, I'm alive. I just felt alive. I was very happy to be washing lettuce, to be receiving meat, to be working at all the different stations. I was working at Protea Hotel Oakwood at the time. I was really excited. And I used to cook for my friends in school. Don't ask me how we did it. It was a very ghetto method, but we did it. And we used to have something called College Week. I was in business college. And while everybody was selling shoe, bag, you know, something they had made, tailoring, mommy, please, can you make some mini burgers, some jollof rice, some fried rice, chicken, put it in food packs. We're going to sell during College Week. I sold out because people were like, thank God, different food from cafeteria food, you know. So I think those were just all the signs, first of all. But by the time I went to Paris and I came back, to be honest, when I went to Paris, my chef at the time, I worked at a Jean Georges restaurant in Paris called Marquette. And my chef, Jerome Tomlan, people thought I was Black American, by the way, because in France, if you spoke English fluently and you were Black, you had to be Black American. How did I find out? So in the kitchen, there were a lot of these Sri Lankan guys, some French guys as well, and they heard me speak English. And to them, it was an accent. Somebody used to ask me, hey, what's up? They use the N-word around me. What's up, man? You know? I was like, you know, I was a shy, you know, newbie interning. So I was like, I just gave him an awkward look, like, oh, hello, bonjour. And they were like, please don't speak French. We're excited to hear you with your... So they used to tell me, ask me, oh, you know Snoop Dogg? I'm like, yeah, I know Snoop Dogg. I thought everybody knew Snoop Dogg. So I noticed that they would always be like, José, Snoop Dogg? You know Snoop Dogg? I'm like, yeah. You know, they'll call another rapper. I'll be like, yeah, I know him. So they thought that I was in like LA, whining and dining with these people. Anyway, so I bonded with my head chef, and who's this guy? So then I said, okay, this person is really passionate. So he put me around all the stations and wanted me to open a restaurant in London as well for the group. Because you're just like, this one has potential. He understands English, everything and whatnot. So I thought I was on my path to my Michelin star, fam. I was like, God, won't you do it? So when I had to move back to Nigeria, I was half depressed because I was like, nah, this is not the goal. I meant to work in more Michelin star restaurants. I meant to be in Paris, perfect my French. You know, I mean, we didn't have a word for it then. That was my jackpot route, you know, and I was doing what I loved, right? So I came back, all the funds to go back to abroad. Everybody, all the doors I was knocking, nobody opened the door again. So my mom at the time was running a food business. So I started helping her. And one day my friend was bored in her cafe and she was like, boy, you came back from Cordon Bleu, let's do something. And I said, like, it's true. You don't have a lot of customers, let's do something. So I did something that eventually became Chef Rex Special. I went from doing 3 at her cafe and like another, my math is off. I did 12 in total. Mm-hmm. I used to use Get Arena at the time. So that was what, at the time.
That's throwback.
That's a throwback. Okay. I almost said Get Arena of blessed memory because it's that bad. I did 12, 13 actually of those. So that was when I was like, wait, I have something on my hands. Because the whole Chef Rex name even came up when I was in Paris. I was on my bed. And I just was going to do my Twitter handle. I was like, oh, Mr. Fregs. I'm like, nah, we paid too much money to be chefs. Chef _ Fregs. And boom, it's stuck. So I'd done the Chef Fregs special and everything. It was, again, that's why I said early 2012. That was when I was like, you know what? This thing, there's something here. The next thing, I was cooking for multinationals. Diageo was calling and they've been faithful clients till today. I've had most of my clients who have been, you know, my clients for the last near 15 years, you know, so that was how that took off.
What's the hardest part about building a food business in Africa or in Nigeria specifically?
It seems easy to build a food business because people like to eat in this country, right? But the hard thing is there's no real, we don't have, I mean, it exists. So guidelines, regulation about how food business should operate, but it's not widely available. There's no real structure and path for you to follow. So when you're registering a food business, it should be very clear that an agency you should maybe walk through, pass through, so that you understand what's happening. But because low-key anyhow works, you know, so you don't have any of those things. But it's when you now grow and you're now big, sometimes maybe you now realize, oh, you have to do food safety. You have to do, you have to know this agency's requirements. When you cater for a party, you can't have food poisoning, all those things. You know, I just feel like sometimes the education is lacking and some people don't know. I mean, I'm sure the hotels and all the big, you know, companies eventually get to find out, but I think I'm speaking for like small businesses that just want to start, that they don't have any big investment, they're just starting from somewhere. I think that's a challenge. Another challenge has just been just the volatile, you know, inflation rates, for example. Mm-hmm. Food is something that is very emotional to people. They want to eat to enjoy first. And get full later. Or sometimes you just want to eat to be full and enjoy later. But at any point, food can be expensive. I know there's rice at home, but that's why a food business exists. Do you understand? That's why banks exist. You can keep your money at home under your bed, all right? You can buy gold and store it in a safe. But that's part of why you keep your money in a bank as well. You go to an investment house. There's a service that helps you manage your money, grow your money. That's the way with food. You can't cater your party by yourself. You can't. Sometimes you can't even feed yourself. That's why, you know, people are hiring people like me, chefs, you know, to cook and whatnot. So the difficulty in that is just, you know, the economy has just been very crazy. I mean, it always has been. It's particularly bad now. So sometimes your selling price can be a challenge, especially maybe you're starting out. Or even if you've been in business for a long time, your customers may want to move away from you because you're trying to at least stay profitable and move to someone else that is cheaper. They may eventually come back because they will know that the quality is different and whatnot, but you're going to suffer at some point. Another thing, I mean, maybe with all businesses in Nigeria, sometimes it's the human capital. Doing a food business is very strenuous work. It's very capital, like human capital intensive, and it's very energy. You know, I've opened a creative agency now. I only have to task my brain. But with food, you're going to cut pepper, you're going to cut onions. Even if you have machines, somebody has to turn it on. Somebody has to ensure that it is serviced. Somebody has to make sure that it is cleaned. And there's some things AI and a machine can't do. You know, you have to be there to schedule the delivery, the logistics. So it's quite an energy draining service, especially in a country where some things are not just smooth, you know. The road is not good. It's tight. There's too much traffic because, you know, we don't have great city planning or something like that. All those things, they add up. So you want to do a food business. The food is delicious, but when is it getting to the customer? Do you understand? The delivery driver doesn't have integrity. He has eaten the food before he gets there. You know, no, but I'm being serious.
No, I know.
Very dysfunctional, you know, dysfunctional systems. But one thing I would say is, I think that's just the beauty of business anywhere in the world. I'm sure there's a challenge everywhere. Even when there are systems and whatnot in place, it's still a challenge. Because sometimes you have to jump such a vicious hurdle. I was watching a thing on Instagram. Somebody said that people think that they make money from their pop-ups. It's like, you don't make money. You pay this permit, you pay that permit, and the next thing, money is finished, you know? So I'll say those things come to mind. The human capital can be a struggle. Oh, inconsistency of ingredients. Mm.
Okay, speak about that, because that's interesting.
The inconsistency of ingredients can drive you up the wall. So you have a supplier, supplies you tomatoes, pepper, and you know, in America, they'll tell you, you have Golden Delicious Apple, you have Royal Gala, you got your green apples. Yeah, you have Just Tomato, you have the one that, we have very funny names for giving, you know, our produce, you know, names. Oh, in the summer, it used to be bitter. In the winter, it's sweet, you know, things like that. So you don't have sometimes a clear-cut way of how things are supposed to be. Pepper today is really spicy. Pepper today is not as spicy. So in your recipe, you have 2 cups of pepper. You put the same 2 cups, it's blowing your head off. Another time, it's not even catching at all. What else? Just, oh, there's no supply today from your vendor. You have to go to another supplier that is, you know, sometimes it's just that. I mean, yes, with any business, you need like a couple of vendors, but sometimes that can be a challenge. So the inconsistency of how the ingredient is a big, big, big challenge. There's a thing on social media now that people say that when you cook jollof rice in London, it's better than Nigeria. Nobody should fight me on this. I have to agree slightly. Don't get me wrong. Jollof rice in Nigeria is delicious. But London jollof rice, fabulous. Guess why? The pepper is consistent. It's different, first of all, and it is consistent. So they are long cast, what do they call them? Romano peppers, for example. They are rodo, very, very hot, very spicy, very consistent. The onions, very consistent. So when you do your jollof rice blend, ay, 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 super. Hey, shout out to Nigerian pepper and tomatoes. I absolutely, but you cook, so we, I had some pepper and tomatoes that I had from Lagos. We cooked it down. We had to label it in our house. Lagos stew and London stew, two different tastes. Same blend of ingredients, everything different. So sometimes the consistency, the inconsistency of the product can mar your business a bit. It can pose a challenge. And, you know, and that can just be tough. You know, even with livestock, the chicken you get today, you see it big, they've inflated it with water. Because you cook it, it loses so much water and it's just a mess. So your meat supplier, the meat that you get that is good quality today, again, you don't know. So you have to find, you have to keep finding trustworthy suppliers and whatnot. But it's not all doom. I mean, we've had very good, like a lady, the woman that supplies us duck, she's just a bit impatient with working with a business that sometimes has, you have to take a bit of credit, but the duck supply has been amazing. But sometimes some ducks are bigger than the other. Just see inconsistency. Voila.
Wait, I didn't even know we had ducks.
Boy, our ducks are delicious.
Where are these ducks, please?
Ah, in Mushiyo, Shomolu.
What?
Yup.
I'm learning something new today. I didn't know we could get duck.
The duck in, so let me tell you, Nigerian duck, very good for like slow cooking. The breast is a little tough. So I would advise you to make like suya or something with it, something that you don't care about. We put it in stew sometimes. But what do you call it? You see that the duck leg of Nigerian duck? Chef's kiss. You confit it, you braise it. We make a palm oil stew with it as well.
I'm getting hungry.
And we've been fasting.
Oh, you know, y'all Lent? Yeah.
Please do our best.
We've been fasting, so we're like...
36 hours.
I thought you were able to say one of the things that would contribute to the consistency of the jollof is 24-hour electricity too.
No. Well, so you know,
I'm not, saying London has 24-hour electricity.
I've not mentioned power because I think even the billionaires in Nigeria are paying through their nose for power. Power is too easy a thing, but I'm fortunate to be in a space where we have 24-hour supply. Okay. We pay an arm and two legs for it, but It's the price you pay for a level of consistency. It's the price.
Are there any mistakes you made early on in your career that helped shape how you build today?
Any mistakes that I made that helped shape how I am today?
How you build today too.
How many mistakes should we talk about? Do you have time?
We have time.
I think one mistake I made early on, one mistake I've been making, honestly, not believing myself enough. I think there was too much of... First of all, I didn't know what imposter syndrome was, but I had it a lot. I believed too much in it, and I didn't know. So that was the danger. Imposter syndrome kind of just crippled me a bit. Because I didn't realize that I could walk up to people and ask them for, like, money to expand, for example. I'm not a big risk taker when it comes to business. You know, I can take a risk on putting 3 extra cloves of garlic in, you know, in the sauce. But to tell somebody that I'm worth $100 million investment, they will look at me. You know, I didn't really believe in my own sauce. And the sauce is good. But another mistake I would say that I made was I didn't structure on time. I ran my business like a passion project that I swore was a business for a really long time. I really only started to structure my business maybe 4 years ago after I hit rock bottom. So in 2020, I actually shut down Chef Rex.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I was tired. I was done. I had a bit of an in-house. There was an implosion in my business, to be honest. A new venture I had done, you know, it didn't go well. I needed to leave my office area. My landlady was giving me stress. There was just a bit of unhappiness in the structure in the structure of my business at the time. I was then trying to put in structures and whatnot, but some things were not just meshing and gelling. I was having my first child, and it was a lot happening at the same time. So I prayed about it, and I just felt God tell me, shut it down. And I was like, actually, yeah, that sounds good. So I decided I was going to be a house husband. My wife was making good money. I wasn't shy. I was like, you know what? At least I've been trying. Let her bring money. And Kukuma know how to decorate the house. I'll take care of our child. I'll be a good daddy. Brownie points, right? But I started to pick up slowly because you can't run away from your first love, can you? You know, this is my life. So I built back slowly. But one thing I now realized, I was like, I'm not going to run it as a passion business anymore. So I took more structural classes on how to structure your business. You know, Tracy Diamonds, Trisha Biz. I was taking a lot of classes and educating myself how to do things properly. So over time, how it has shaped me now is that there's no decision I make that doesn't have vision. Mm. It has to have a plan, a structure. It has to be, like at Chef Regs now in my business, we don't just say things like, oh, we had a successful event. Why was it successful? What metrics are we using to judge ourselves that is successful? So I think me seeing how running it as a, because, you know, I'm not saying I hate my teammates or the people that work for me or with me, but before it was, oh, white family, there were no reprimands or no consequences for bad behavior. I would scream and shout, but now I don't scream. I always tell people, I said, me, I'm turning 40 very soon. I can't be having high blood pressure. So, oh, you broke, you did this after you were given an instruction. Okay, admin will email you, you face the consequence, and I move on, you know. So I'm just a bit more head on in the game. I'm more strategic. And I just have better vision for who I am as a person and for my business.
I love that. Can you even speak to when it shut down? Was it because of there wasn't the right type of people buying? Was it like a more of like a financial flow issue, or was it more of like an internal?
It was a mixture of everything you just said. I was just like, were you there? So there was definitely my friend Shay Bandele of Paid HR. He said, "Boo, I mean, the reason, for example, at the time didn't do well. I mean, y'all thought it did well on the outside. On the inside, we were struggling. Like, boo, I mean, we didn't just fund it enough. You need somebody to throw in money so that you could keep your operational costs up while you were running things. But again, I told you I wasn't a risk taker, was I? Then, you know, there was just human capital problems, you know. We're falling apart. There was trust issues. I mean, it's all water under the bridge now. A lot of them are doing well and whatnot. But at the time, we're not just agreeing. Because there was that thing of we're working as a family until it didn't feel like a family anymore. And so I think people just felt hurt. And, you know, I felt hurt too. So we're all in our feelings. And that wasn't working anymore. Then it just needed to halt as well, because literally our office was, you know, this classic Nigerian landlord thing. They watch you update their property, and they are not happy with the business that they are doing there anymore. They send you parking so that they can now rent it to a more quiet tenant. And after you've done a lot of upgrade, you know, to their spot. So, but yeah, I just took it. In hindsight, that needed to happen. And I know I sound like therapy right now, but I needed to the worst needed to happen for me to figure out what I was really made of. So yes, it was a combination of all those three things that, you know, there was a financial, it wasn't just the financials were not making sense, because we needed to push marketing, we needed to push cost of production, something just to give us a little bit of like a lift before we could fly on our own. Mm. So that happened too.
But I saw yesterday you just launched, right? So we're here.
I just launched, you know, four new brands.
Please talk about it. I want to understand the business behind it.
Yes. So again, I hit rock bottom again, by the way. I think rock bottom does not respect if he has hit you once before. 2024, I hope I speak for a lot of people, if not everybody, was just kind of a weird year. And it was weird for me because, I mean, I'm in between London and Lagos and with my family. My wife had this great opportunity to work at a really great, I don't know, can I call them a multinational, but it's just one of the top companies in the whole world. She was heading a division until everything shut down. And, you know, with me in London, trying to build again was kind of tough. Very tough. So you have one child, you have another child coming. You're like, hey, God, what's going on? And, you know, my business in Nigeria, Chef Regs, was, my business in Nigeria was doing well. But wasn't doing as great as it should be. That's the truth. Because it exposed that people were, you know, Nigerian clients. Where is Chef Frakes? We can't see him. I'm like, if you don't want me to grow. So I think there's another challenge. Some clients who like, they're paying for to see me. Why am I not there? Why are they seeing my staff? But I'm just like, so day two, they are growing. We need to be able to do more dinners. We need to be able to do more private events. You know, we're trying to grow into the, and my thought process was, Gordon Ramsay, for example, is not going to every dinner. He has set up something that works. In fact, Gordon Ramsay makes money as Gordon, and he makes money as a restaurant business as well. Yeah. And that was where I needed to evolve to. So making that transition was very hard. It was very, very, very hard. But for the last two, if not 3 years, I started to see Frank Zapote as a halt, not a goodbye. I started to see it as, well, I mean, you just need to make it work. It's a good thing. Frank Zapote has rebranded into something I've called Jaye. Jaye Yoruba means to enjoy. It means to enjoy in the world. And the tagline is, to eat is to enjoy, and to enjoy is to eat. And it came to me because, honestly speaking, I wish I could tell you a really interesting story. There's a brand that I saw that I really liked, and I thought, why didn't I think of it? So it kind of, there was a bit of jealousy and rage. So I was thinking one day, and I get my inspiration in the shower. And I was showering one day, and the name Jaye came to me, and I started sketching like a logo at the train station with my phone. So I kept it aside. So in October, I called up who's the brand designer now, Josh. I said, Josh, you remember when we did Frank Zapote and you told me that I should do something that doesn't exactly have the Frank's name on it? I have it now. So I explained what Jaye was. Jaye is like, I call it pop culture food. Nigerians like hardcore food, and I have a brand for that too. We like our jollof rice, our amala, efo, everything. But we also like a little shawarma. Put two sausage, put French fries, put chili sauce. We like ijekuje, you know, we like pizza, but the pizza can have asu on it, so we don't mind. You know, we like roast turkey with barbecue sauce. We like jerk chicken and this. We like a bit of, the worst word I hate in my life, we like intercontinental. I hate that word. We like continental dishes. We like a bit of, or we like what a lot of my chef colleagues are doing these days, you know, you take jollof rice, but you put like lots of asu, you put a spin on it, seafood jollof rice, seafood okra. We like spins. So I call it pop culture food, things that are trending. We like taco. We like a little pulled smoke, tozo smoke. Shout out to Chef Isume. Smoked 7-hour tozo taco with rodo that we got from the south side of the mountain in Jos. And we made a little chili out of it. We love a good story for our ingredients, you know. So I call it pop culture food. So that's Jaye for you. Jaye is meant to, you know, cater to like the after party. I mean, when you guys are getting married, I wish now that Jaye existed. Okay. I would have done it. But, you know, that kind of after party food where it's like little bowls of nice things going around. Want people to be able to order like a nice burger, you know, like a nice special. We have so many, like the top thing that we do, I think, is between our Thai style fish with jasmine rice. And we have this something called Pamo Jambalaya that has like a jakika, you know, braised tozo and beef. We have some chicken pieces, some shrimp. You know, it's just it's just like a whole lot going on, but it's delicious. Then, you know, stuff like that. So it's meant to like, you know, you need a pick-me-up, you want something special, you can order it to your house, you know, you want just like a tray of pamo jambalaya, Thai fish, whatever else we have on our menu, you just get it to you straight to your home, you book us on your parties, that kind of thing. Then there's Ia Fregs. Ia Fregs is Ia for anybody watching who doesn't know. Ia means more than Yoruba as well. So it's an ode to my mom. My mom is my first chef example. She made the best food, you know, growing up. So I've been nursing the idea since 2019 to do a brand just modeled after like her cooking. But I wanted it to be something very simple and direct. It's just fresh fish stew, asaro, some soups, and jollof rice, fried rice, and chicken. Very classic Nigerian party food kind of vibe. That's what I'm going with. So that's what Ia Fregs is going to do. Ia Fregs is going to just like introduce, I want to introduce people to more soups. I think we're not eating a lot of like Nigerian soups. When you think of Nigerian soups, you only think of eforiro, egusi, okra, maximum, and that's it. But it's so much more. I mean, people try and venture into bitter leaf, but I don't think people are eating oha soup enough. I don't think we're eating mi and taoshe enough. There's so much that we're not doing. So I want to try. But knowing my people, we end up at Eforiro. And they go say, oh, Chef Frank, while it was nice, please, can we just have that goat meat Efor? Thank you very much. People like Afang soup.
Mm-hmm. That's days, him. He loves
people love Afang soup. So, you know, stuff like that. We want to just we'll do that on a weekly basis and see how it goes. But we'll have, it's a limited, but because we want it to stay true to just like home cooking, because at the end of the day, maybe we'll have an ofada rice sauce, you know, there as well. Then there's canapes by Chef Regs. Canapes by Chef Regs was already on the Chef Regs menu, but the problem was people equated Chef Regs to just fine dining and private dinners. So it occurred to me that the canapé business needed to stand on its own, so that when you see it, you don't bond with private dining. You instantly bond with it says canapés, you know. So you just think, oh, I'm having a party, I should call Canapés by Chef Regs. You don't need to see me there. You don't feel like you miss me because it's just finger food going around. There's no attention to like maybe storytelling detail, chef experience detail. So I realized that was money that I was, you know, leaving on the table because it was hiding under the bush of Chef Regs. So the last brand that I have. So again, the Canapés by Chef Regs brand is targeted more to the event planners. I mean, we want to do like box of, you know, you guys are hosting at home, we just want a few bites, you can order a box. But it's really for events, your wedding, you're hosting your shareholders, you know what you want. Please, if you have 5,000 people you want to feed, we can do it. Just accept our invoice, you know. That's what that is, you know, caters for. We want to do, we can get it as bespoke or as, you know, the way it is on our menu as possible. But I think my favorite brand that I launched is a true expression of who I am. For a very long time, I gave up my creative genius for free. I didn't even think that I could exchange it for value, for money, until I did something for a very good friend of mine. She's a client, mentor. She wears a lot of hats in my life. She said, oh, Bubemi, please, my EA is a really nice guy, but I hate the way he dresses. I really, really hate the way he dresses. You know fashion. Please, can you just get him some clothes? I've given him money. He always buys nonsense. I said, okay, no problem. But remember I said now that some of the mistakes I used to make was running my business as a passion business. So I was almost going to pull the passion move of, oh, go to David Wedge, go to the store, get a suit. I'm like, Bubemi, pull back. That's not how you think now. Do you know what Bubemi did? I sat down with Canva. I set up a whole proposal, a style manual for the office of the EA of my friend's office. So what did I do? Style guide for this office. Man or woman, they have a guide. So I gave him a general overview. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the days of the week, when they are going for a function. So some of it was direct instruction, but some of it was kind of like a guideline. It took me about 2 weeks to do. I was like, man, this is a lot of work. Oh, I should be getting paid for this. The perfume he's using, the chewing gum he should have on him, the hand sanitizer, down to those fine details. So she says, she's like, whoa, boy, I mean, this is a lot. I asked you for clothes, but you're giving me an even better solution. Guess what? She says, sorry, I need some other people in the office to get dressed as well. What can you do? Because it was already a template, the vendors that made the clothes just got an instruction. They made the clothes. Boom, they had that. I get another call. Hi, Bubemi, please. We have another office. We need you to do their uniforms as well. At this point, I'm like, Bubemi, there is something here. So guess who I sat with? Little chat GPT. Hi, chat. What's up? So my name is this. I'm noticing the next thing. I asked it for creative. I said, I want to launch a creative agency. I'm great with image consulting. I'm great with also telling brand stories or storytelling in general. So guess what? Apart from this, so we sat down. Chad helped me come up with the name, the Fregs Atelier. So I liked Atelier because it has a fashion word to it. And also Joel Robuchon, I've been to his Joel Robuchon Atelier to eat. So I was like, you know what? This makes sense. The Fregs Atelier. So another thing that convinced me was I had lunch with my friend. He's a chef in London, but he's a pastry chef. And I was like, I mean, Fregs, I need to make some extra cash. You know, my salary is great, but, you know, there's just all these bills. I need to send money home. You know, I just want to know that, okay, there's good money. Said he wants to start, that his apartment is too small to bake cakes. His apartment is nice, but just thinks he starts baking cakes. And I said, oh, you're going about it the wrong way. Bake this type of cake. So I essentially gave him like a business idea, the name, the story behind it, in an hour, over lunch. at the end, he was so gospel. He was like, how did you pull that out of your head? We said we meet up. We're walking randomly in Westfield. The next thing, he had given me a whole business idea and plan, story. Like, it was so rich, you know. I coined it after his mom. I said, what's personal to you? I said, it needs to feel authentic. It's okay, let's do this. Like, please, you know, I can't pay you consulting, but let me please buy us some. Like, you bet. You know, I had some good Thai food that day. So I decided to launch a creative agency because even when we did the launch event, I had to tell everyone, like, look, this was my creative mind. You know, everything you're seeing came from my, this is exactly how I wanted it to be. So I felt like the Frex Atelier birthed, like, even the brand images of all the other brands as well. So I just wanted to find ways to be honest, the creative agency was also born out of frustration. I just felt like I wasn't doing more. I have cooked, I can cook, yes, but what was more, you know? So now I can sit with people, I can make money from my couch. I'll be honest, that's the sweetest part. I can make money from my couch, but I'm also just tasking my creative side that I've just allowed room free and, you know, people pick my brain for free. Now you want to talk to me, oh, this is a link. Go on the Vendy link, type in your details, and I can talk to you just for a couple $100 an hour. So, yeah.
You know, we need to get you on Convo. We literally have a platform for that.
Oh, you have Convo?
Yeah. No, we have a platform that literally you put your hourly rate, your 15-minute rate, and people can pay for your
minutes,
time.
30 minutes,
so, Chef,
hour.
The Frex Atelier is coming to Convo. Let's have a conversation.
Yes. So I love you. You talked about this creative part because one part of you I've always looked and admired is when you talk about fragrance, right?
Chica. Okay, so Chica, I have a funny story. I probably, there was a week that I ran this Chica maybe 4 times. It was crazy. One place, this place. And every time I run this Chica, I'm like, oh, you're wearing this perfume. She'd be like, yo, how do you know? Then one day, I couldn't figure it out. She's like, God has caught you. So, yeah.
So tell me more about your love for fragrance. Are you planning to do anything there? Because I think there's a huge opportunity.
So to be honest, you know, fragrance, so my fragrance journey or my passion for fragrance started, honestly, when my auntie walked into my room. I think I was about 25 or 6. And she walked into my room and she's like, oh, your room smells like a boy's room. Now, if you're a boy, you know what I'm talking about. Don't ask. And I was very offended because I thought I was quite hygienic. You know, my hygiene was good. How did my room smell? But I now realized that, oh, that my laundry basket was in my room. I was like, okay, let me take that out. Then on purpose, I started to scent my room. Mm. I mean, I wore perfume here and there. You know, Issey Miyake, you know, my signature scent, Amen. Perfume was nice. But that was all it was. It smells nice on my skin. You spray it, you do this. Don't rub perfume, please, on your hand again. Don't do this ever. You know, you do that because you saw them do it. So I went to the store called LSA. I'd met Sean, who's one of the owners, when he was selling bed sheets from the boot of his car. Yes, LSA, I'm that old a customer. So he told me he had these candles from a brand called Acapellagio, I think. And I bought something called the Rose Candle. What? I went back and I bought more candles. I gave my mom to put in her room. I wanted all the rooms I went to normally in the house to smell nice. Then I traveled once. I now discovered perfume oils. I just started getting gradually into it. But it was that COVID era. And I found out that they were, so fast forward from like 2004, 2005, all the way to like 2020, 2021. Started hearing that there are these people called fragheads. Like, who are they? Like people that are really like obsessed. So I found out there was a community. So I was like, maybe I'm not crazy after all, because I couldn't walk past a diffuser, not smelling, not try it, and probably buy it, you know? And I also was very upset. I started buying perfume a bit more. My friends would give me perfume. I would get it as a gift and I liked it. But I started to study it. The note breakdown. Who was the perfumer? Who did this? What house is it from? When was it released? And me, I'm an ethical sometimes. When I get into something, get into it.
Sounds like my husband. He's obsessed.
So I went from owning scatter shower numbers of perfume. I said, you know, it was like a drug. 100 bottles, 150 bottles, 200 bottles. I'm in between like 200 now. But it was time we grew from 10 to 50. So I started buying, a bit embarrassed. I was buying like what they call unboxed perfumes. Please don't buy those things. Those things are fake. Then I started buying actual perfumes, you know. I started discovering just a fantastic world of scents, notes. I started having favorites, you know, I discovered that rose was my favorite note in perfume. I like Turkish, I like Bulgarian. Then you mix it with a bit of incense. Oh my goodness, it's fantastic. Then I have my seasons. Like today, I'm wearing a passion fruit oud, for example, with some extra, like a salty marine accord perfume. It's the Creed, Millissime Imperiale with, what's the name of this guy? What is the rose one? No, Oud Maracuja from Maison Crivelli. And I've met Thibaut Crivelli, for example, who's the owner of Maison Crivelli. I've been working directly with the Creed fragrance house. So it's just been an amazing journey.
Wait, explain more when you say you're working with the Creed house.
So I'm a brand partner with Mountain Place in Nigeria. So, and they're the official distributors for the Creed brand here. So shout out to all the other people selling it. Y'all are not legit. Where are you getting your bottles from? Anyway, I'm a partner and I've been very fortunate that Creed has done some intentional campaigns and I've done 9 of them now.
Wow.
I've done 9 campaigns for Creed. So proud, so excited. All hits. I've also done Ajmal as well. I've done about 6 campaigns for them too as well. I've also partnered with Mountain Place to do something that called Eau de Frags. So you sit down to dinner and the food you're having is inspired by the notes of the perfume. Stunning, right? Yes. I made like a peach egusi salad the other day. We did like a minted green curry with some chicken and lamb because we had something that had like, you know, a very herby, grassy note to it. And for dessert, we had that was easy. It was like chocolate, vanilla in the perfume. So we did like a toasted white chocolate ice cream. Mm. We did like a chocolate soil with some, just
divine. I need to be at these dinners.
So we're going to do another Eau de Frags, maybe Easter. So I'll invite you. Okay. So my world, like, almost all the perfumes at the Mountain Place range, I'm in love with. My collection now is very based on deep research and study. And you asking if I'm going to do anything about it, you know, like release my own line soon. All I'll say is that let's watch and see. Mm. Let's watch and see. I'm not as excited to own my own stuff yet, but I'm very excited to be in the space in that light for now. That's all I'll tell you.
Okay.
We've been able to export African culture in terms of Afrobeats, music, movies. It seems like, you know, we're now getting into the wave of our food, our fashion. What do you think it's going to take for us to scale African food globally, similar to Italian and Asian cuisine? What is it going to take?
Honestly, it's just unity, man. We just need to be, everybody needs to, okay, we have a cultural bias to even our own food. Let me put it like this. We just need to be united, not to have a bias, and do what all these other industries did. So I'll start with fashion. I remember when Diola Sego was making $1,000 dresses in the late 90s and early 2000s. Because my auntie got married in 2000, and her dresses were already like, whoa, how dare you make your dress for 100 and something thousand naira? And her dresses were couture, you know? That was when she was like, we can be on the runways of the world. The Tiffany Ambers, all you that started, those are the people that put their neck on the chopping block. And that is why all these brands, Lisa Folawi, all these brands, that's why, you know, there's a craze and whatnot for it. I think people like me, I'll say the Ozozis again of this world, Tolu Eros, have been able to find ways in the diaspora now to say, hey, look at us, we're here. But I think what is also fortunate for us is that, like you said, fashion, music, the music in particular has exported the culture. So people are like, okay, what else is cool about you guys? You guys dress well, the music is fire, how far the food? Thankfully, Jollof Wars also got us a little bit of traction. But now it's like saying the door is open. How are we walking in? Are we walking in with tattered clothes? Are we walking in looking sharp? So I would say that people like me who are already doing the work, but when I say unity, you have a Nigerian auntie that will tell you, this Eforiro you've done is not authentic. Auntie, we're selling Eforiro to somebody from Denmark. They've not eaten Eforiro, but you can't give them too much pepper. The thing also has to look like what they understand is food. So you want to sell in like, let's call it Borough Market in London. Borough Market or Spitalfields. very beautiful market as well, where they have like lots of open air people selling stuff. When you want to sell pounded yam and egusi, you're not going to put it, just put it big. No. You're going to call it, this is a yam dumpling. You have to be, branding is our problem too. It's a yam dumpling with a melon stew. Don't, if you say the melon stew is traditionally called egusi. Oh, wow. How's it mean? We just put some spinach. Don't call it efo tete, or what they call it, or igbo. Don't call it that. You tell them it's kale, spinach.
It's kale.
And when they ask, you don't tell them it's iru, iru by there. No, you tell them we have a fermented bean. Think of it as your miso paste. Oh, really? Mm. All right, I will try. But if you tell them it's iru by there, hey God, what kind of deep name is that? I'm not saying that we should be shy of our culture, but you give them soft landing. Yeah. Oh, they will find out that it's called iru. Yeah. Because the Japanese one too is not going to tell you that it's not true. Miso. Do you understand? True. But miso, it got introduced into pop culture. You know, Asians will tell you, like the Chinese, what we eat as Chinese food is not really Chinese food. Yeah. It's a gentrified version. So us too, we need to be united that Omo, for us to blow, we have to gentrify small, low. You know, so when you're doing let's back on this pounded yam. So it's a little yam dumpling. Oh, what's a yam? It's like a potato. Mm-hmm. It's like a mash. Oh, it's a little starchy. Yes, he has more starch. You know? Oh, what's the meat inside? Oh, it's just a little ribeye. It's a little beef rib. Don't tell them it's Aaron. No. Don't put roundabouts in the meat yet. When they come into the main restaurant, I said, oh, we have a version that is more traditional. You'll find people that are more experimental. When you're making jollof rice, take a little chip from how paella has become popular. Get a big open pan, put like pieces of chicken on it, put like a big jollof rice bowl, and just be like, the smokiest jollof rice out of Nigeria. Jollof, this is the winner of the jollof world, the best jollof you find in London. Oh, what's a jollof? Oh, it's like a paella, just from Nigeria. Oh, word, I'll try. Free samples. Oh, the chicken is succulent. We've sold. So we just need more people pushing that kind of narrative. And, you know, I'm not saying there's this argument about, oh, fusion cuisine or not fusion. No, straight down Nigerian food is fine on its own. But we just need to present it in a way that people understand. It's like saying a child, if you put a quadratic equation in front of a child, the child's not going to get it. But if you break it down in a way he understands, he'll still get the answer. So that's what I'm just really trying to say. So it's going to take a while. We just need to be united, but we're already on a good start.
That's such a good point, because there was a time when I eat sushi, or Japanese sushi, the one I was introduced to was the California one.
Yeah, you start you easy.
That's the one I started with. Then... one of my investors was like, hey, let's take you to an authentic Japanese.
Exactly. Restaurant.
Bruh, when I say saying sushi, one that is giggly, like jiggly, like I'm like, and you put it in your mouth, I'm like, fam, this is not the sushi that I want. Same thing with Chinese food too. What they eat is very different from the one that they serve in the Chinese town.
Yeah, and that's why how can you give somebody that's not eating okra before, you don't even draw okra. No. Shout out to Chef Wu of Onjeko. Yeah. She has this like stir fry okra she does. It tastes exactly like local Nigerian stew, but she has done it as a stir fry. She put a nice piece of prawn on top, put a little green tete oil, but she's not going to call it tete. So we've done a Nigerian green oil. Then she fries some crispy greens on top. She may call it tete. And when they ask, what's tete? Said, oh, it's a crispy green that grows locally. And, oh, fantastic. There's texture, there's beauty, but she's still introducing them to the authentic taste. But if she gave them like the way they serve it in what they call it, in a traditional Nigerian restaurant, they'll be like, oh, that's overwhelming, you know? So we need to just switch it up small. But because I can tell you for sure that Wumi's stir fry, okra, I almost told you the last time I worked with her. It's that good.
What's one African food trend that you think is overrated? And what is one that you think is underrated?
God, I'm going to get boxed for this one. Overrated. I think low-key, sometimes we need to chill on this jollof rice pee.
I was going to say.
You can fight me a little bit. I think we just need to chill a little bit. I know it's our export. It's easy to sell, but...
It's carbs.
Not even that. I mean, me of all people say that my sign off is jollof regards, but I think sometimes we need to chill. There's other stuff. Let's relax. Now, an underrated gem. I don't think we're selling fried yam enough, for example. Fried sweet potato. We eat chips now. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're selling. Fried yam is goated. Sweet potato chips. Oh, pepper sauce.
We are fasting, no. We are fasting, please.
Sorry, I'm having a moment. Tears in my eye. I don't think we're selling fried yam enough. Shout out to Lekki Chips, for example, though. What else do I think is a trend that is not...
Like, what ingredient do you feel like we should be using more? It should be brought to the forefront?
I mean, I think we should be exploring iru, fermented locust beans, in other ways apart from soup. I think we should start thinking of it like a seasoning to barbecue meat, for example, roast fish, put it in curries. Most stews need to have it. Like, I think we should explore that. I put it in dessert, actually, as well. I think we should start seeing it more as a better versatile ingredient than that. I like that what a lot of chefs, including myself, are using uyayak. It's the precursor fruit, the 8-inch fruit. It's very toffee, vanilla, tonka bean, kind of, you know, chocolatey flavor. We use it in banga soup, but now we're seeing it used as a syrup in cocktails. We make a great syrup and a cocktail that Chef Regs as well. We use it in ice cream. It is to die for. So I could see like maybe chocolate flavored. I mean, Midunu chocolates that they do different. They do like a pepper soup chocolate as well. So I think more like Midunu chocolates, for example, uyayak, fried yam, sweet potato chips, stuff like that from the culture. We need to shadow a bit more. I think the jollof train is tired of driving. It needs a rest. Don't fight me, please.
It's not my favorite food.
Okay, Chika, I will fight you a bit on that one.
So question I have is around, because you talked a lot about this is my passion, and I now had to realize it's a business. But do you feel a bit sad that this passion is now a business? Like, do you feel like it rubs... It changes the dynamic.
I would say I'm sad. I would say it's more frustrating sometimes because I will not lie. Some days I still catch myself trying to be passionate over thinking like a business person. So and one of the ways I surrendered was that I had to hire a business manager.
Yeah.
So that, you know, somebody's there to catch me even when I'm, you know, I swear, I had a debrief meeting this morning and I had to confess to my team that some of the brands we worked with this quarter, I was nervous in my ask for what I wanted. Because I was scared that they wouldn't give it to me. And because I didn't want to lose it, I lowballed myself. Mm. That was passion. So it happens sometimes. So that's why I have a business manager to solve that problem. Somebody who's, and I call myself out. I was very vulnerable with my team this morning. I said, guys, next time, before I make some decisions, my business manager needs to, like, yo, are we sure this is the right thing? I taught my guys my formula. Did we do the right ask? You know, so I would say I'm sad. I say it's more frustration. And that's why I'm happy I have my creative agency now. I can be passionate all I want. Somebody else is going to pay for it.
So speaking of this, do you have like a coach or a therapist or someone you work with to help you through these blocks?
Coach and therapist. I have my wife, first of all, who I don't talk to, but she notices that I'm frustrated. She's like, yo, you're frustrated. What's up? You know, because there's that, you know, man of the house, you don't, you swear that you are vulnerable. And sure, she can see my weakness, but come on, Faith, you have to be a bad guy a little bit. But she's like, nope. Some off, something is off. What's up? So I speak to my wife a lot. Then I did get, I have mentors that I speak with from time to time just to share my frustrations at any given time. I have mentors for different things. But I have a few people, older friends that I talk to. I'm like, look, I need a session. I need to speak. I was in therapy in 2021. And I still use some of those materials till today. But I'm mostly good these days. I'm mostly better. I've had, you know, senior friends and in the industry who are actually like family to me. And two people I'd like to shout out today is Timi Ejiwumi of I Do Weddings. She sat me down and was very upset with me. She was like, dude, why are you talking like you don't know who you are? Like, it's like you've forgotten what you're made of. Like, stop that. And she talked some sense into me. She's really rude and blunt. And she gave me some instruction. Go and do this. Christine Egbe, She also of she's of Quorum and The Wedding Guru. She said, "Fregs, I understand you very well, but this is not the time to cry and throw a pity party for yourself." You know, she walked me through a whole lot of the emotions I was going through late last year and made me realize that sometimes you just need to reach out sometimes. They will listen and there can be a solution. Because one of the things I did last year that was very promising and great was because I spoke to her. So I would say that I do have those pockets of people, and it's helped a great, 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 great deal.
And what do you want your legacy to be?
It's so funny you asked that question, because the launch event that I did made me realize that if all I did was run Chef Fregs, doing private dinners and being the celebrity chef, as great as I was, and I'm very grateful, I don't sound conceited or like I'm not happy for that. I was like, is that all? You know? So my legacy now is, apart from raising two incredible boys, is to raise more young men, more young women in this industry to be very empowered by doing this food business. A lot of businesses have people that just work for them and they go, there's always turnover. But I actually want people who are going to, I told my head chef of our Chef Rex. Chef Rex is not a group, by the way. It's not the Chef Rex group. I'm so proud. Can you guys clap for me, please? Thank you. When I was doing all the whole, like, the legal and everything, I was like,
who are me from a parent group?
A parent group, very good. So I want the legacy to be that the people that worked with me, that started as waiters, plate washers, they became the operations lead. They became the VP of this. They started taking strategic decisions, and they trained the next gen. Mm. And it now becomes this actual structured organization. I told my head chef, I said, Wayne, I want you to buy a car, and I want you to rent, not stay in your parents' house, I want you to rent a place you live because of the salary or the investments that you are reaping from here. So if a bunch of my of my team leads, with Jaye and Ia Frex, for example, they don't just earn a salary, they have stake in the business now. So I wrote them into it. People said it was a silly thing to do, but I was just like, no, these people slaved hard because of a day like this. They suffered when our parent company wasn't doing so well. So I want to give them an incentive, not just to stay, but an incentive for them to dream and vision as well. Bruh, it worked like a charm. Wayne is so locked in. He's so dedicated. He really has ownership mentality, which was something that, as much as I taught it, I had to show it as well. So that's the real legacy that I want to have. And also, I mean, apart from doing great things, like I said, for my kids, I want them to grow up and know that their dad and their mom did something that they put things together that, you know, was for them. I want them to know that we're kind, we're thoughtful people, and we're visionaries in every sense of it. I think that's what I'm most bothered about the legacy for now. Because I said it at the launch that I want these guys here. I don't want it to be, I left my job. No, we grew something. Even if they left, there's evidence that this thing followed them. This Chef Rex, this thing, he touched them. Like, there's evidence that no matter how many jobs they work, there's evidence that Chef Rex did this for them, because they didn't just walk and get salary, they ate a good fruit from working with me.
I actually love how you said that, because it reminds me, because you talked about Gordon Ramsay. So do you see yourself having restaurants around the world?
I do. Remember how I said I was not a risk taker?
Yes.
I think something has woken up inside of me. So they've been talking about restaurant for like the last 2 years. I have concepts, but I'm taking my first bold step to actually start conceptualizing a restaurant, as you know, so there's one. And they say when you start one and you do one, the rest is history. Ia Frex and Jaye, I want them to have, you know, how do they call it, brick and mortar locations. I want them to have actual locations as well. So there will be restaurants. And I'm very interested in still chasing my personality on screen. I still want to host TV shows. I want to do more cook tours. I want to travel and eat and talk about the food. I want to go to Thailand so bad. So if you are watching and you want to sponsor that thing, look, what am I doing? Just sitting down with Chika, you know? So I really want to do like what Gordon Ramsay is doing. Gordon Ramsay, I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but fam, I would buy whatever that man is cooking. I'm there. I respect and love him so much. I know he has said some, I mean, Marcus Samuelson in his book alluded to him being racist. I hope he has grown from making ignorant statements like what he said in the book, Because I read Yes Chef by Marcos Samuelsson, and I think everybody needs to read that. Fantastic book. But Gordon Ramsay really inspires me because he's such a personality on screen and such a force in the culinary industry, like doing his restaurants and whatnot. And he has different expressions. There's like Bread Street Kitchen, there's burgers, there's the fine dining. I'm like, yes, you know, that's who I want to be. I want different expressions of my business. So yes, that's in the, it's coming.
Okay, I love it. So we're doing the fire round.
Yes, so we have a rapid fire
okay.
fun round. You just give quick answers to the question.
Sure.
What's your guilty pleasure food that would shock people?
Oh, this is easy. So just plain boiled spaghetti, like hot. It has to be hot from the, and a little bit of the pasta water in a bowl. Obviously it's been salted, right? And I have to eat it hot like that. My favorite thing in the world. If I want to be extra, throw in a little bit of good quality olive oil, like Attili olive oil, for example, some black pepper, or maybe chili oil.
What's the first dish?
No, Chika is still in shock.
Because you said the pasta water.
Because I don't want the pasta to be dry. So I have to eat it piping hot. So I have to be eating it from the stove. Mm. Delicious. No sauce, nothing, just that.
Yeah, you guys are in the pasta crowd. I don't do pasta.
Oh, we don't do you either. Yeah. You're not better than us.
What's the first dish you ever messed up so bad that it scarred you for a bit?
I was maybe 8 years old. I burnt eggs and my father whooped me. He's like, do you want to burn the house down? Then also, I think I sent out food that wasn't seasoned enough. I can't really say the event that it was. And people ask, they judge my whole career like, dude, after Le Cordon Bleu, you can't salt food? So yeah, that's happened. So burning eggs as a child and messing up, you know. Oh, we also sent out food from Frex Apporter at the time, 150K worth of food, and it wasn't seasoned at all. And my client rejected all the food. Yeah, scarred me for that year.
Okay. Good. What's your favorite restaurant not owned by a Nigerian chef?
Not in Nigeria?
Anyway,
my favorite owner and Nigerian chef. You know, I'm really a hole in the wall restaurant kind of guy, honestly speaking. But if anything comes to mind, where do I like to eat? Oh, there's a restaurant called, I can't remember. Why am I not remembering it? It's behind Selfridges in London. It's like a breakfast spot. Odla or something. We'll come back to that question. I don't know. I'm forgetting the name now.
As long as you're not saying Harrods, because, yeah, please. What's one smell that always brings you peace?
One smell that always brings me peace, a good smell of
a scent,
a good peony, like peony flowers. I just like how soft it just like, because you said brings you peace. I like other smells in a room, but I really, really like the smell of peony. I just think of true tranquil, true like sense of rest and just love and softness and, you know, good desire. That's what I'll say. So peonies.
Mm. Okay. So the last one. If there was only one dish you could eat for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Look at his.
Is that fair, Jay? Is that fair?
No, but if there was only one, you know?
If there was only one, I may sound like a hypocrite, but maybe a good smoky jollof with goat meat. I don't like plantain. Don't fight me. So I don't.
Why not?
I don't. I know Chika is looking at me.
I know, but why not? I'm confused.
I don't know. I think planting to you is something that is a little, y'all are playing too much.
Is what? Is what? You're about to say what?
I think it's a little, I think it's a little too overrated.
Stop it.
No, yeah, I don't, plantain is nice. You know, I like unripe plantain over ripe plantain.
No, this one.
Listen,
it has to be soft.
Listen.
Like, you know, Dominicans.
Have you had it made well? Maybe that's
obviously
the problem.
He can make
how,
it.
We need to know now.
So I can eat plantain, but have it for the rest of life. No way. Just a good mushy, nice jollof rice.
Smoky jollof with goat meat.
Smoky jollof. And go, because I have to do that one for the rest of my life. Another thing though I could eat for the rest of my life is like a good bowl of like a Thai red curry and steamed rice. I can eat that every day for the rest of my life.
Okay.
Wait, I have one more. What is your favorite scent in the world?
Chika. My favorite scent in the world. Is it a note or like a you have to give me specifics.
Notes. Let's see.
Okay, no. Help guide me. Okay. My favorite scent in the world. For a room is different. For a bathroom is different.
No, on you.
On me. This is tough. Oh. Honestly speaking, there are many. Oh God, this is tough. Okay, help me narrow down. It's between four.
Okay.
Iris Malikan from Maison Crivelli. Very creamy Iris number. Then there's Out of Seduction from Perfumology. She's a Nigerian perfumer.
Mm.
Just a chocolatey patchouli bomb is sweet.
I need to get
and
that.
There is, it's between Portrait of a Lady and Midnight from Bodicea. They kind of smell alike. But I think I'm going to go with, you know what? I think I'm going to go, final answer. This is tough. Forgive me my perfumes. I love you. But I think I'm going to go with Midnight from Bodicea the Victorious.
Okay.
It was a special one they made for a club because it has a big N at the back. But it's just Bulgarian rose, Turkish rose, incense, a bit of saffron. I think there's raspberry in there. But it's just, I spray that perfume and I feel all is well with the world.
Mm-hmm.
I love how it smells. It's a little, it's like it teases you. It projects and it pulls you back. It's smoky, it's sweet. Mm. Then it's mysterious, then it's present. It's just, and it's very, you know how you said about, I feel loved, I feel together, I feel powerful
mm-hmm.
just from wearing that scent. Mm. So yeah, I would say Bodicea, God, I can't believe I narrowed it down to one. Because it has rose in it, so. He wins.
I have a treat for you after
What's
this.
What's a treat?
So I'll have you smell something.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Okay. Who do you want to see on the Afropolitan podcast? That's always our last question to everyone.
Who do I want to see on the Afropolitan podcast? Ooh. You know what? I'm going to be biased. One person comes to mind now. Oh, two people come to mind. Can I say two?
Yeah.
They are women.
Yeah.
Shout out to March Month. Adejoke Bakare. Because being the first woman, probably the first African person, I think, like a real Nigerian person, descent, like you're not of descent, like you're Nigerian that should just be in London, to win a Michelin star is, I mean, Ire Hassan Odukale has won one as well, yeah, to be fair, with his restaurant Ikoyi. But a woman doing that kind of food in the restaurant, winning, it would be nice for you to, I think the world needs to hear more of her story. She's very shy, so Stage, okay? See you. Then I don't know. Chimamanda has my wife loves Chimamanda. And, you know, my wife thinks two worlds of her. And I remember reading Purple High's Viscous when I was younger. No, I read half of A Yellow Sun first. And Chimamanda, forgive me, it only took me this year to realize why the book was called Half of a Yellow Sun. I'm really sorry.
Why is it called Half of a Yellow Sun?
Oh, you don't know yet. That's so great. What does the Biafran flag look like?
With the sun.
It's half of a sun. Yellow sun. And it was the Biafra story at the end of the day. Yeah. You know, Half of a Yellow Sun was the first book that all my emotions were at work. Mm. I cried, I wept, I laughed, I imagined things. It was fantastic. And it was a signed copy my uncle got for me from Glendora at the time. So it was a precious book to me. Then I went back to read Purple High's Viscous, and it just felt like I was reading my own childhood. So I thought, who's this person that can make things come alive?
Yeah.
Then I married my wife, who's a feminist, who's very pro the woman. So I think, you know, just watching her over the years and just seeing her go through everything, you know, with her new book, it would just be nice to, and I love listening to Chimamanda talk. She's like an old soul in a young person's body, but she's current at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah, those two people.
You know, the Half of a Yellow Sun was the first ever book that made me cry. Because as I was reading it towards the end, you know, so whoever dies, I remember running to my grandma because my grandma that gave me the book. I'm like, how can you be giving me this book that somebody is dying? Like, it didn't even. Yeah,
that was
very
for
powerful.
Me,
that's very
we don't
powerful
know what happened
book.
To Kayene.
Yeah.
So we're all still distraught till today. Because I just like, she needs to come back.
Yeah.
And it was the way she wrote it. Like, she's not coming. She's not coming.
I need them to redo the movie. They need to.
You got money, though?
I'll commission it to you. They need to do that book justice, like proper. Yeah.
But I thought the movie, I understand what you're saying, but I thought it was a great effort.
Yeah.
What do you call it? My wife had some work to do with it. She was meant to be in it, but hey, shout out to the team. But hey, great job, you know. She learned a lot from that process as well. It taught her about understanding the power of, you know, buying rights to a movie, for example. Mm. So I don't know if I can say this, but actors in Nollywood, and in Hollywood, who are of African descent sometimes, when books like that come out, they don't know 10 years, they just buy the rights. They buy it for 10 years. So, because you just like have that one in a corner somewhere. So
they buy it from like the author.
Oh, you buy it from the author.
Okay.
And it's good money and good, like it's another level of investment for the author as well. So for example, like Children of Blood and Bone that's coming out as well. Oh, the rights were bought a long time ago. Mm. All this audition and stuff is just current day stuff, you know, because once you see an epic story that's sounding good, you bid for the rights, you know.
So when they sell the rights, does the author still get some percentage of the movie as well? Mm.
The author is the writer of the movie.
Okay.
And you get a lot of money for it. You get, and you have a good lawyer and you have good negotiation power. You will make a lot of money.
So what do the rights cover then? Is it like maybe 50%, 40%?
I mean, it depends on what the terms are. Yeah. I don't know those nitty-gritties per se. Or they vary from contract to contract, I'm sure. But when you buy the rights, it means like, so for example, Chika buys the rights to my book. Chika is the only person that can create film, imagery, anything like that. So if you now actually go and do something else, you will regret in your life. So nobody else can just make a movie or anything around that story, you know, because somebody has bought the rights.
The rights, okay. Awesome.
So then after you buy the rights, you now pay for development, because the reason why you were saying they need to redo is because developing stories, especially when we've bonded with them in your book, is tough, you know. So you have to, you know, get it developed, get it workshopped, then, you know, you start to get the actors in and all of that. Why am I talking like, I mean, see, when you're married to Lala Akindoju, you tend to know stuff, Sha. I'm feeling really intelligent.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're so lovely.
Thank you so much. Thank you.